The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for coming today. If you're sitting in the back and can't hear us, then you should move to the front because our microphones aren't working right now. So thank you all for coming today on a Friday. We know many of you didn't have class, but Friday was the best time we could schedule these events in because, as you can tell, spring semester is very busy and there's a lot going on around the school in addition to your elective schedules, which just throws everything off. So today we're going to be talking about jobs and activities. Basically, what are your different options for the spring and summer? We just want to present you with this information so that you can make the best decisions about what you're going to be doing with over the next 2 years. There's a lot of information, which is why this bright yellow sheet is kind of an outline of everything, so that, you know, we're going to be going through a lot of different categories, so this is a way that helps you remember it. Feel free to take notes, and if you have any questions during any period of the presentation, just feel free to raise your hand. We'll do questions during the presentation if you have them, because we go through so many different topics that, you know, we don't want people to forget by the end. So feel free to jump in with that. So the first thing we're going to be going through really quickly is on this beige sheet, we have a timeline basically of all the different things that the major dates of spring semester. Obviously, this is not a full list of everything, but just some of the major things that are on the 1L radar. And these are dates that we got based off of websites and talking to different activities. However, you should definitely keep up to date reading the docket to make sure that these dates don't change, and just to make sure that there's other opportunities that come up that will be in the docket that we haven't listed here. So these are the major events, and, you know, it seems like a lot of stuff on here, and it might be a little overwhelming at first, but you're going to remember that you're probably not going to be trying out for every single thing at the school. You're probably not going to be applying to every single position. So this is just a way for you to see when is what, so you can start thinking about what activities you want to join. So by the time the deadline does come to apply for something, you're kind of aware of what opportunities you want to take advantage of, so that you aren't making these decisions last minute, that you're actually, you know, putting full thought into them. And just also along the lines of the schedule, you know, look at things around what's around spring break. And, you know, you might be wanting to plan your trips right now for them, but, you know, look at if you want to do journal short write-on competition, you'll see from this calendar that it is over the spring break period. So you might have to adjust your plans somewhat accordingly. It's not impossible to do something fun for spring break and do journal short write-on. You just don't want to, you know, spread yourself too thin. And then also, of course, with dates, you'll be looking at your legal rhetoric calendar. So if you haven't figured out a calendar system yet, spring semester is an especially good time to be putting things into a Google calendar, be putting things into a hard calendar or whatnot, just because you don't want to miss out on things because, you know, the dates flew by so quickly. And then on a final note about spring scheduling, a lot of people second semester like to start outlining a little bit earlier. There's a few reasons for this. The first is, now that you have a semester down and you've taken one set of finals, you kind of know what professors are looking for. You kind of know what law school exams are like. You kind of know how to outline and put concepts together, so it's easier to start outlining earlier. The other reason is because spring semester is so busy all the time, you know, to knock out some insular subjects, you know, constitutional law is broken up into so many categories, it might be easy to outline 3 weeks of a subject and get it all out of the way instead of waiting till the end of the semester when you have more classes this semester than last semester. So it's not something to scare you about, it's just something that you might want to think of. If you feel like you're starting to understand a subject, if you outline that section, that might be something good. Are there any other notes? Any questions on this? Okay, and then on the back of this yellow or beige sheet is also a list of all of our contact information with all the activities and summer jobs that we did. Just as a reference point. So if you hear something during this panel that sounds really interesting to you and you want to follow up with more questions about, like, what was your experience, Liz, doing a judicial internship, you can email her or go to her office hours. We want to be sure that everyone feels comfortable going to any of the Dean's Fellows, not necessarily just the Dean's Fellow from your section. So we'd be happy to talk to anyone about any of our experiences or try to point you to someone that we know who did them. So our office hours are always open. So the first major part of this presentation is going to be about giving you different options for summer jobs. Obviously, this list is not exclusive, but these are the major things. So the first type of summer option that a lot of people look for are paying jobs. And these are both some firms pay, as well as some government positions and some nonprofit positions. So don't think that just because you're going to a nonprofit position that, you're going to be necessarily working for free. My roommate, my first year, she worked at the Women Asian Law Center, and she actually got a $4,000 grant over the summer, which is a very nice thing. So a lot of these nonprofits have private funding so that they're able to pay the people who work over the summer. And in terms of firms go, a lot of big firms don't necessarily hire first years, but you can always look into it because some of them do. Small firms are also a great opportunity for a lot of first years and second years to gain a lot of great experience. And it's something that I did after my second year, so I'd be happy to answer any questions about that. But a lot of them do pay, and a lot of small firms are less affected by the economy, so they're more willing to hire people for a short-term basis. A lot of the big firms are affected by, Wall Street, but smaller firms aren't. So that's definitely a good option to look into, and that's a lot of it is through networking, but it's a really worthwhile thing to look into. So if you're thinking of working as a law firm, that's definitely something to consider. The second summer option is externships. So Jamie, if you want to talk a little bit about that.
All right. Well, as you can see, coming up on the 28th on your schedule, there's an externship fair going on here at school that's really helpful. There'll be tons of employers here. You can walk around and meet them and give out your resume and talk to them about what their needs are, when they might be hiring. You'll find that some are already full for the summer because of 2Ls that they've hired, but they may be looking at people for fall externships. You can do part-time externships in the fall and spring. That's a great option as well. If someone says they've already met their needs for the summer, don't be discouraged. You can get in at another time. An externship means that you're working for school credit. So you pay for the tuition credits. You pay tuition over the summer if you do an externship. And you have to do a seminar with it. So it's a two-hour-a-week seminar. You just come in. You talk about how your externship is going. You do all kinds of things. They have all different, they have some based on government work, some based on firm work, sometimes they'll have, an environmental externship seminar, things like that. But just keep that in mind if you do decide to extern, you're going to pay tuition and you're going to do that seminar. The plus of that is you'll knock out, maybe 6 credits over the summer, so that gives you a lot of room to kind of play around with your schedule in the next 2 years, which is kind of nice to not be bound to, all these classes every single semester. And then your last semester of your third year, you can switch to part-time status and pay less tuition, and then it ends up kind of working out, the total amount works out to be about the same. So don't let the tuition necessarily deter you. You can take out student loans for the summer to take care of that. So don't let that deter you too much. It also might be a GPA boost. You don't get a grade for the work time, but you get a grade for the seminar. So it doesn't hurt to have kind of an extra A to kind of boost your resume up a little bit. And the other option is a lot of the same jobs that take externs also take interns. The only difference with that is you're not getting school credit. You're basically working as a volunteer. So if you're thinking about interning, take advantage of the externship office's contacts, but just don't pay tuition, just work as a volunteer, and that opens you up to applying for scholarships and grants over the summer. I can't quite remember the website, but if you Google PS LawNet, I don't know if it's pslawnet.org or whatever, but Google that. They have lists and lists and lists of summer scholarships that no one applies for. A lot of these go unclaimed. Even the ones that look like they're specific to minorities, often they'll give them to you anyway. So take advantage of that if you're interning.
Liz also had a great point about externship seminars.
We have a question. Do you want to get any questions?
Oh, sorry.
I was just wondering about, like you were saying, sometimes it looks like they apply to minorities, but it's more, like there's a lot in the docket, for example, about diversity, and it's very rare, it seems, that they say, like, you know, include, like, it specifies what they mean by diversity. So is there any way that, like, do we have to... It seems kind of pointless to like investigate everything just to
right.
find out like, oh, but no, you don't apply. It's like, but no, you don't qualify. So is there any way to get a better fix on like what constitutes a diversity for
Well, the ones in the docket, a lot of times are related to firms and things like that. I would maybe ask the career office about those specifically. The ones on PS LawNet that I'm talking about are oftentimes, say, the Asian American Women's Association will be giving out a summer scholarship. That oftentimes isn't just for a woman of that ethnicity. It's for anyone doing public service work. So sometimes there's differences. So I think some of the ones in the docket that say, you know, this firm named diversity scholarship, those might actually be more limited, and that might be something you can ask the career office about.
Yeah, the difference is, like, the ones in the docket are diversity pipelines, so they are dedicated towards increasing the diversity at that firm. But the ones that Jamie are talking about on the PS LawNet are just coming from organizations that have primarily diversity interests, but they're just trying to bring in anybody that will help further that goal.
I guess I'm just trying to figure out, it very rarely says, like, I don't know if, for example, a woman is considered diverse. It certainly doesn't help in law school applications.
I might just ask the career office, and that's something that we can maybe talk about more, too, like, one-on-one, because it's so hard to tell, you're right, with each individual scholarship.
On the note about the externship seminars, another great reason to do your internship as an externship, if you're willing to take the credits and take out the loans, is that in your seminar, it's usually 12 to 20 people, but everybody's doing a different job, so it's a really great way for you to network and hear about other opportunities that you might have missed out on. You know, you'll see people working at Department of State, nonprofits, FBI, Department of Transportation, just all over the place, and it's a really great way for you to see what other jobs are out there and hear about those experiences beforehand, so that you can kind of keep your eye out for things that you might fit in during the fall or the spring. Because as we keep telling you, we're in DC, so we have a really great advantage during the school year, because all the other schools have to go back to their destination, but we're still here where all the jobs are.
Okay. Liz, do you want to talk about your judicial externship?
So a judicial externship is just where you go and you work for a judge and you take it for school credit. Most every judge that offers a judicial internship is going to require that you take it for school credit. So that's what I did. I took a seminar here, and like Jamie said, it was 2 hours a week. You come and you discuss your experiences. But the best part about doing a judicial externship is that I got to be at the court. And you not only do all the substantive legal work, writing memoranda, editing their bench orders, and all that kind of stuff, but you get the experience of going courtroom to courtroom and watching all these trials. So I got to watch a really complex civil trial, and then I could jump over in the next hour to a really, you know, high-level criminal trial. You know, I was here when the Duke lacrosse player came through. I was there when Ted Stevens was in the next federal courtroom over. So working for a judge has all those perks because you get to go through and see the kind of cases that go through. And then on the flip side, you're getting to see all the procedural aspects, which are really helpful because if you take on clinic or that kind of thing, you have a little bit extra advantage because you know how to file paperwork, you know how judges like things, and a lot of times that will really help expedite your, you know, motions and that kind of thing. And it's also a really great networking opportunity because, you know, these judges are the people that are connected to the U.S. Attorney's Office, to the DOJ. They have spouses that work there. They oftentimes came from big firms and that kind of stuff. So once you work for them, they're very interested in helping you succeed because they know that you're just working for them for a very short period of time to get experience, and then they'll look out for you and tell you how to get to the next step of wherever you're trying to go.
If you do an internship during fall or spring, is it additional tuition, or is it...
You take it the same as you would any other units.
And yeah, people always talk about how invaluable our resource judges are, you know, in just connecting you, so that's obviously a big plus of that. For those of you thinking about the study abroad program, Charlie did that last summer, so talk a little bit about that.
One of the themes that we're going to hit on today is that, you know, after your first year, your summer experience doesn't have to be overwhelming. Basically, some of the anecdotes we'll share basically get at, you know, practitioners, lawyers in the field say, you know, we don't expect you to have this dream job. You don't have to wow us with anything. We understand how law school works. You need to have some kind of good story to tell. Study abroad can help you tell a great story during an interview. It's a great conversation piece. I went to Egypt. It's not exactly the most popular place in the world to go. It's the only ABA-accredited program in the Middle East. So that tends to come up. You know, people say, why Egypt? And that's your icebreaker. That's what you talk about. This school is really pretty renowned for its programs. We've got, I think, a lot more than a lot of other schools. As you see, you know, Hague, Turkey, or the comparative law program in Europe, and Chile. Couple of great advantages about going abroad generally are that this is kind of like your last summer to sort of like have fun and like maybe not have fun, but like not be super serious, not get on that like track, okay, I'm going to be serious, I'm going to try to get a paying job, and then I'm going to try to, you know, work that into an offer after I graduate or something like that. My dean's fellow last year, who was 3L, told me that she felt her only regret from law school was that she just didn't go abroad after her first year because she, you know, busted her ass all of law school. She had an offer really early on, but she just kind of would have liked to enjoy that last summer, see a place she'd never been to, take some classes, get some credits, you know, just like you were taking classes here, except you're abroad, you're seeing a new culture, and you're, you know, with people just having fun, basically. An advantage to doing it at WCL is that your grades transfer, and summer programs are not quite as intense as your regular semester in the sense of, like, you know, you're going out at night, you're seeing a new country. Well, for most people, it's a new country. You have tours on the weekends and things like that. So it's way more fun than being here, for sure. The disadvantage is that it's a much more compact semester. You're still going to cover a semester's worth of law school work, but in a WCL program, it's going to be covered in, you know, 3 weeks of class and then finals. So it's a lot of work, but it doesn't feel like it. It really doesn't, and I don't think they're not quite taken as seriously. So your grades transfer over here, and our programs are designed so that you can, you know, they're only 4 weeks long, including finals, and so you can come back here and then get a judicial externship or work, you know, some kind of job or something like that, which is definitely a valuable experience. I did mine at a program through Seton Hall, because it was the only program that was accredited. I was kind of handcuffed because it was 6 weeks right in the middle of the summer, so there's no way I could do work, which I didn't really mind so much because at the end of spring semester, I was like, you know, I don't want to think about work. I just want to go have fun, enjoy my summer, and I haven't really found that it's been like a detraction for me. I do know people who work. I had a lot of friends who went on the study abroad programs here, and you know, some of them got jobs in their home, in their host country. The people who went to Chile, one guy worked for KPMG. Somebody I worked for, I went to Egypt with, worked there. The people here, Ava Sanders, runs the externship office, will definitely bend over backwards for you if you're nice. She will definitely help you get an externship abroad. And that can be a great excuse to stay in a country for another month or something like that. And you go home with a great summer experience. You've got something on your resume besides just, I took classes. But word to the wise, if you're going to do it in another country, you know, expectations coming from America are quite different than expectations in other countries. I know that a lot of people who wanted to do human rights work in Egypt just, like, their jobs just fell flat because of different expectations. They wanted to have stuff set up before they got there, and then the Egyptians were just like, that's not really how we work. So when you get here, we'll talk about it, and then things kind of fell through. So you'll have to work a little harder for that, but I definitely recommend going abroad. It's a great way. You're getting credits. It's just like staying here. The classes oftentimes are really interesting. It's really cool when you're taking like an Islamic law course to go to like one of the oldest mosques in the world. You're never going to get that here, but you could take Islamic law here. So I can't say enough great things about study abroad. So if you have any questions, you can find me. If you want to go with another school, I think it's LSAC.org, the place that you guys did the LSAT through. I'm pretty sure they have a list of all the accredited programs throughout the world, and you can sort of take a look at that.
Just along the study abroad note, if you are interested in studying abroad, I think we highly recommend doing it over the summer after your first year as opposed to doing it during the school year. During the school year is just much harder. There are some programs, but if you're in any activities, they're usually year-long commitments, so it's hard to do an activity and go study abroad, and usually you won't be able to get as many units, so you don't want to fall behind on that. So, you know, if you have a real passion to apply your legal knowledge somewhere else, summer's the best time to do that.
And one last note on that, I know the externship office for local and abroad externships, they keep notes on, like, everyone at this school who's ever done that particular externship in that particular country. So that's a really good resource, too. On their website, you can go in and kind of see what people thought, because I think that's much more relevant when you're thinking about going abroad and, you know, things may not work out, and that's really valuable for you to know if someone's experience was good or bad. So make sure to use their website if you are interested in something particular.
Okay, Dean's Fellow positions. Jamie, do you want
to? All right. Another option over the summer is to work, or, I mean, pretty much summer or fall or spring, is to work as a Dean's Fellow, and there's tons of different positions. At this school, Dean's Fellow can mean all kinds of different things. Over the summer, you can work for a Dean's Fellow for one of the clinics, which is really, I've heard, pretty interesting, because you get to, you know, work with clients, you get to work with the professors, you get a lot of, like, a lot of responsibilities because the clinics don't have the students here over the summer. So you get to kind of carry on those cases and really get a lot of good experience. A lot of people who are doing externships or internships also choose to work for a professor for, say, 10 hours a week to get a little bit of spending money. That can be really good because you're doing legal research, you're, you know, getting to know a professor. I mean, that's invaluable to get to know someone really well so that they're willing to go to bat for you and network for you and write your recommendations and all of that. And that can be hard to do in a class of 100 people. So work 10, even 5 hours a week, you know. A professor might be advertising for 10 hours a week. If you can't do it, but you're really interested in what they're researching, you and a friend could go apply together and maybe they'll let you split it. You know, there's lots and lots of options. What else? Also, programs at our school also hire Dean's Fellows, so you can work for the admissions office and give tours, like Liz does. You can work, like I said, I work for a professor. There's the integrated curriculum program, which is this, which we'll be hiring later in the spring. You'll see that in the docket. That'll start next end of the summer, next fall, so that's another Dean's Fellow option. All the programs, human rights office, all of that. There's so many opportunities. So just really keep your eye out in the docket. I know that gets old, you hear it all the time, but that's where those positions are advertised.
And the reason we emphasize all these Dean's Fellows opportunities are because, if you hadn't noticed, one of the most pivotal things you can do in law school is network. So any chance you can get to meet people who have already gone through all these steps, the better off you'll be. Even working at admissions, you would think, oh, I'm just giving tours and that's all, like, you're not going to get anything out of it, but it's actually quite the opposite. You know, I get to work with the admissions, the assistant deans of admission who are all, have all worked in firms. They keep in touch with all our alums. They have all these other contacts, and they've been so helpful in giving me tips during fall recruiting and other options. So especially in a time like now when the economy is more difficult to get a job in, any connection you have is going to pay off. And especially with professors, a lot of these Dean's Fellows positions will carry on into future semesters. So they're going to work really hard to figure out what you want to do. And a lot of times they're going to be the ones pushing you, and you're not, you know, and without that, things would be a lot more difficult. So don't overlook this, and don't just think of it as like, oh, it's just another job to make money, because it's a really big connection that you could use.
Another great advantage of the Dean's Fellow positions is that a lot of the professors in the programs hire a little later into the semester. So, you know, it kind of works out nicely time-wise. So obviously you're going to be wanting to apply to a lot of things now, but if things are, you know, difficult, if they're not exactly working out the way that you want them to, you know, start looking more at the docket, because they'll be later. And so, you know, and they're just as good opportunities, you know. Being able to research with a professor on the book that he's writing, you might get credit for it, or, you know, that's a really great, you know, story to tell. Like Charlie was saying, you know, you want these. It's about your experience and how you can translate that into future jobs. So being, you know, working one-on-one with someone on, you know, substantive legal research is a great opportunity. So don't overlook those positions. And then finally, summer school is a great way for you to get some more units over the summer. You can either do summer school, you know, just take summer school classes, or take summer school and, you know, do a job. So it has some flexibility. And, you know, as I think some of the Dean's Fellows had mentioned before, you will have to pay for the units that you do over summer school, but if you plan accordingly, you can offset those costs. For example, I took 6 units after my first year, and now I'm able to go part-time, which is essentially cutting my tuition in half. So it will work out, so don't let money be a huge determining factor in how you choose your summer things. Also, summer school, because the classes are smaller, because a lot of the classes are smaller, because you'll have more time to focus on just one class, a lot of people do much better during the summer than they do during the school year. So if your grades aren't where you want them to be, the summer is a great time to boost your GPA before you're applying to jobs later on in the process. And also, you know, you can get those hard classes or those classes that you don't really want to take out of the way over the summer, you know, just so that you don't have to worry about them during the school year. For example, legal ethics is a class that you'll all have to take by the end of your second year. And Professor Shipp, who's the most popular ethics professor, teaches that over the summer. So you can take his class, and it's a lot less competitive to get into, and it's just a 2-unit ethics class that you can do. So, all right, Charlie, do you want to give some?
I have a question about the session. How long is a session?
I think it's 8 weeks, I want to say.
It's on the registrar's website. There's an academic calendar.
It is slightly shorter than the regular academic semester, so you might be meeting for a little bit more. But it's the same number of units usually. And our school is really great about offering a wide variety of classes over the summer. So there's everything from like the hardcore classes like evidence you can take over the summer to legal ethics. So you'll see the registration dates for summer school as well as how long they are and when the finals are. It's already posted on the registrar's website.
How many people went to Opportunities Day yesterday? All right, so that's pretty much everybody. So. I won't belabor the tips for the job search too much, but I'll highlight a few things. Something you might not think about is professors. Last spring, I went to my contracts professor and said, you know, can we just meet for lunch? You know, it was very casual. He took me to lunch, and he said, can I just lay out your options for me? I gave him a pretty wide variety. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And like, you know, right off the bat, he remembered a classmate from, I think, either law school or college or something, and said, you know, you should look this guy up. And so it's that easy. Like, professors, I guess, are very, they feel like they're sort of underutilized by one else. You know, they're here to help you succeed. They're here to help guide you in the profession as you're growing. And so that's a great way to just do a little networking, bounce some ideas off people. I was just talking to my tax professor yesterday, and he was, you know, pretty much just said, you know, here are my concerns, go. And he's like, you know, I'm happy to talk. You just point me in the right direction and I'll help you. So it's a great resource for you to think about jobs, number one, and just also to sound out like where you want to be, what you want to do. I'm sure you all have, like, most of you have a very, you know, you'd be happy doing any number of things. And so that's a great resource. I would say, as far as job skill, like, think outside the box. I have a friend who works for the Boston Red Sox, and, you know, he's like number one on the list of people who, you know, I'm going to be asking, you know, what do you guys have that's quasi-legal? I mean, that's something that differentiates you from other law students, because as a 1L, when you're done, you know, everyone kind of looks the same. You've taken the same amount of units of coursework. Many of you will intern or extern it with judges, or you'll have some kind of legal experience, but it'll all kind of look the same. And so if you want to stand out, if you want to really set yourself apart from your peers, a great way to do it is to think outside the box. And I think Kim Walton talked about that yesterday. You know, think about what brought you to law school, what animates you, what makes you get up and do the work every day. If there's something that you'd like to do and you just don't think it's technically, you know, quite a legal job, do it. I mean, it's going to help you distinguish yourself, and it's also going to be useful work. Don't get pigeonholed into thinking that if you don't extern for a judge, or if you don't do some kind of, like, you know, strictly legal position, it's not going to be worth it, because it is. The legal field is very broad. So if you're thinking about doing a job that's unpaid, think about the EJF grants. Think about some of the public service scholarships we were talking about earlier. There's ways to get funding. If that's a concern for you, you can come talk to any of us. But I think opportunities today probably covered most of these listed bullets here for finding a job.
Yeah, I just want to add, I think a lot of people really stress out about finding their job after their first year, and something that we didn't put on this is just don't stress out too much. You know, this is not necessarily going to be the job that you do next summer, the summer after that, and then the job that you do after graduation. The vast majority of people try out different things, and that's what's great about the job after your first year. You know, employers know that it's really hard to find a summer job after your first year that isn't exactly what you want to do. It's all about doing something. So don't place so much emphasis on finding this dream, because you're going to have so many other semesters, so many other opportunities to, you know, explore different things. So, you know, that's why you just want to cast your net wide, apply to as many things as looks interesting to you, and you might find out that you really love something that you didn't think you would like, or vice versa. So.
One other quick thing. Somebody came up after the first panel and asked, you know, like, what about going home? Is that okay? Like, you know, is it going to look weird in my resume if I went home and did legal work? And I think there's two points to draw from that. D.C. is a great resource because it's kind of like, you know, the lawyer's sandbox. Like, there's so many legal jobs here. This is the, you know, the center of law in America. So there's going to be a lot of jobs here, but there's also going to be the competition for those jobs is going to be stronger. So if you think about, like, you know, maybe if you go home, maybe you're a bigger fish in a relatively smaller pond. And so there's another opportunity to think outside the box. You take a job back home, you know, you're with your family or your friends or whatever. It might not be the job necessarily you want, but you're going to get great experience because people are going to be like, you know, wow, you're in school in D.C. That's really impressive. For some reason, that is impressive to people. So, you know, keep that in mind.
Yeah, geography doesn't matter as much as your first year as what experiences you're going to be able to gain. No one's going to think it's odd that you were at a certain place and that you want to eventually end up in D.C., so don't worry about that. Especially if you have connections back home, you know, work those connections definitely is something that we always say is do a lot of networking and follow up. Because that's one thing that I think a lot of law students don't do. At all these externship fairs, you know, next week you're going to be handing out hundreds of resumes, and all these employers will be getting resumes from so many people, but what they like to see is the initiative of people who follow up on their resumes, who send the person a quick email, like, is there anything else I can provide you, who call them up and ask them, like, when are you interviewing, you know, show that initiative to show that you really want this job, because it's so easy to, like, just, you know, mass mail out hundreds of applications. It's actually following up, which is really what sets you apart from other people. All right. Are there any more questions on jobs? Otherwise, we'll switch gears into activities, which we'll do pretty quickly.
Okay, so this spring is when you guys can start picking out what you're going to involve yourself in, both over the summer and then through the rest of, like, 2L and potentially 3L as well. So I'm just going to go through a quick rundown of what your options are. The first is journals and briefs, which I'm sure you guys have heard a lot about. The first note I'm going to make is that it's really not mandatory. Like, it may sound like, oh, everybody goes on a publication, but there's a lot of people that don't. You should really take this into careful consideration, because journals and briefs are heavy commitments, and they're not ones that you should take just to take. You should have some interest in either, you know, researching and writing, because that's a lot of what it is, or else it's going to be a lot of your time, and if you don't like it, you're going to end up kind of just weighing yourself down for 2L and 3L. On that note, the way you get onto journals is short write-on. We no longer have a long write-on. So short write-on or grade-on are going to be your two options. Short write-on, as your calendar says, starts March 3rd and runs through March 17th. The second week of that period is your spring break. So if you know now that you're definitely going to write on, then make your plans in consideration of that. Some people will go home a little bit early and then come back after 3 or 4 days and then just work until it's due. Other people switch it up. Whatever works for you. Some people don't go away at all, so you need to take it into consideration. And then for briefs, that is a different application process that comes out more towards the end of your spring semester, and generally they're more kind of just like an information application sheet and then, you know, some citation quizzes and that kind of thing. So briefs are just a little bit different because they're smaller publications and they are more condensed subject materials, and they don't do like the comment length publication, so you won't be able to fulfill your upper level writing requirement on a brief. Whereas a lot of people will write their comment, well, if you get onto a journal, you're required to write. So that's also another consideration that you want to take on. And then for clinic is mostly an activity that 3Ls will do just because of the popularity, but a lot of 2Ls do apply. It's a lottery system in that regard, and you will be getting an information session about that probably in March or April. And clinic is a really great experience. I know a lot of people who are really happy to do it. There are some that are one semester long, and there are some that are a year commitment. So you want to do some research into that, because if you decide to apply, you'll have to rank your priorities and that kind of thing. Keep in mind that clinic is a 7-credit commitment for whichever semesters you do it. So it is a heavy time commitment. For moot court and mock trial, they both have two sets of competitions. The first ones are kind of just preliminary, let you try it out, see what you like, and in that event, you can do both. But for the official tryouts, which occur at the end of February, you must choose one team to try out for. You cannot try out for both. So if you're really wavering, you don't know what you like, then we would recommend that you do both of the preliminary ones, which are occurring towards the end of this month. And both of those require like a payment. I think it's around $25 for each and that kind of stuff. So just do your research, really think about it, because mock trial and moot court are both really heavy requirements either way. And if you're on mock trial, your competitions will require you to do a lot of practices in the semester that you're competing. And the same thing goes for moot court. There's traveling involved with both teams. And even when you're not competing, this is a team environment, so you are going to be helping the team that is competing. And then Marshall Brennan is the program we do here where we teach constitutional law to local area high school students. And it's a really rewarding program, but again, it's a big commitment because you're teaching 3 times a week. It can be in the morning, it could be in the afternoon, and then we have a seminar that we attend every week. So it's extremely rewarding because you get to train these high school students to do a moot court competition in addition to teaching them about their constitutional rights. But you will have to plan your schedule around whenever your high school needs you there. So there's a lot of pros and cons to each of these activities. And then the Dean's Fellow positions we've talked a little bit about, and they have the advantage of being flexible and allowing you to work from school and get paid. So it's a really great opportunity, not only for the networking and the paying, but also because it gives you a chance to kind of see what else is in the school, because you work with a lot of other students, you work with professors, and it just opens up a lot of other opportunities to you. And then lastly, student organizations. When we talk about membership and leadership, what we're trying to get you to look at is really pick the couple of things that you're really interested in and you can really commit to. Because it's a professionalism issue if you take on too much and you're not doing a good job with all of them. Because a lot of what being a lawyer is, it's about your reputation. So if you don't commit and do a really good job with each of the activities, it's going to reflect really poorly in all of your activities. And then also, when you apply for something, there's a certain expectation that if you applied, you were 100% serious about taking it on. So you should keep that in mind as well. And you know, the upper level students here are the students that will graduate before you, will get into jobs before you. So you want to put forth as positive a reputation as you possibly can.
So what does that mean for these student, for these like mock trial, moot court, these things like that? If you were going to try out and then you were like kind of like half and half on it, and you basically committed. So like, what is the repercussion within the school for that? Like if you, what's the next thing coming up? The mock trial, this competition is next weekend, or this weekend, or whatever it is. If you're gonna do that, and then you were gonna like,
there's no that's why I was talking about the preliminary ones. This is your chance to just try it out and have nothing, because if you win either of the moot court competitions or the mock trial closing competition, you just win. It's not like you win a spot on the team or anything. It's just your chance to show yourself if you can do this or not. Come the actual tryouts, though, there does start to be that kind of expectation that if you went through the tryouts and you expended their time and yours in this, that you were supposed to be serious about it. Of course, it's not like, oh, if you decided in good faith beforehand not to take it, that's one thing. But should you accept any of these activities and then, say, over the summer, you kind of just decide, oh, well, I just got accepted to clinic, so you know what, I'm going to drop mock trial, that's really not going to reflect well, because that's why we do all these things in the spring, is so that we can allocate, you know, positions and competition teams for summer and fall and all that kind of stuff. So you would be making a bad reputation for yourself because you're going to be kind of screwing up all these other plans that other people have started to rely on you for.
So it's you're basically earning a bad reputation with the upper-level students who are going to be choosing for,
right,
for other events. Okay.
And that carries on because you'll find that the legal world's small, and so it's very helpful if you know you want to work, say, at the Montgomery County State Attorney's Office, and you know two people the year ahead of you that work there, you know, they can really help you out in getting a spot in that particular job. So reputation, like Liz said, is very important. And what she was talking about kind of leads into what we have next, is kind of judging and gauging how many things you can actually do. Like, I'm sure you look at 2 and 3Ls and you see the long list of things that we've gotten ourselves involved in. You're like, oh my God, how do they do that? Like, you still have, 15 hours of classes. Like, it's kind of crazy. So now is your time to really plan. I know what I did last spring is I kind of ranked what I wanted to do, and I thought about, here are my top two choices. And then I didn't get on to journal through short write-on. So then I kind of moved down the list, like, okay, well, now I'm going to take my next two choices. But then over the summer, I got on a grade-on, so I kind of had to readjust. So you really have to kind of prioritize and think. You cannot do everything. We have a great school. We're so fortunate to have, tons and tons and tons of opportunities, but you simply can't do them all. So make a list for yourself. I know I love to make lists, write everything down. Do that and kind of prioritize so that way you can adjust as you need to without kind of having to drop something huge and make yourself look really bad. Just a quick note, grade-on, I know you've probably heard that. I wouldn't count on that. If you have, awesome grades this semester and you're like, I really want to be on journal, but I'm going to skip short write-on because my grades are so good, that's great. I'm glad you did really well, but you never know how the next semester is going to go. So journal's really important to you. Go through the process. If you don't get on over the summer, all you'll do is fill out a form saying I'm interested in these journals in this order, and you turn it in, and that's the grade-on process. So, don't necessarily count on that as your way in. Just, again, things take longer than you think they will. Journal, for example, you have 2 hours of office hours a week for some journals. That's not all you do. You get assignments that might be 20 hours that week. You have to write a 45 to 65 page paper. That's not included in that. So really think about your time commitment. Even if you're, say, the president of an organization, you think, okay, we'll put on two events in the semester. It won't be tough. It won't be a big deal. Well, the school will make you come to leadership retreats and do all kinds of other stuff, So things take what you think they're going to take and add some hours to it and really try to judge well. And there's online, there's an academic planning guide that kind of gives you a map of, okay, you have to have this many credits to graduate. You've already taken this many in your 1L year. How am I going to plan for the next 2 years to make sure I get everything in? So take a look at that. Towards the end of the semester, Dean Jaffe will do a session with you guys about registering for summer and fall classes. And in that, he'll go through the exact requirements that you have to have to graduate. So they'll really take care of that for you. We'll kind of do a separate session on professors, kind of our honest opinions, like closed door honest opinions, things like that. But we'll help you plan for that as well. Just make sure you plan ahead. I know it feels very strange to be planning for next fall right now, but that's kind of the way things work around here. So just be careful about that. You really don't want to overwhelm yourself. And one thing I think I didn't realize is, our school likes to be really hand-holdy and nice and say, the big picture matters, grades aren't everything. And while grades aren't everything, they're important, I'm not going to lie, they're important. So don't let your extracurriculars kind of take over what should be your number one priority, which is grades.
Yeah, we just really want to emphasize that these activities aren't like what your college activities were, that were a few hours a week, that
if you don't like it, you could just quit at any time without any repercussions. And we don't mean this as a scare tactic, but it's an honest reality, because we want everyone to be able to pick what they want, that they'll be able to enjoy and get the most out professionally, because you'll retain so much more, you'll enjoy your life so much better if you're actually just picking a few things that you actually want to do. And a lot of people also forget that, like, after your first year, you'll also want a personal life, and, like, you know, you could fill your calendar with all these clubs, but, like, if you ever want to see your friends or, like, family or significant others ever again, like, you know, factor in that too. So, you know, everyone just sees all these opportunities, and it's so easy just to want to do everything. But remember, you have your third year too. And so I think, being a 3L myself, the vast majority of people I know regret taking on too much their second year and being burnt out by their 3L year. Whereas there's other people who had spaced things out who are much happier. So just remember, you have a lot of time to do everything, so you don't have to pile everything on at once.
So you're playing with all these options, and you're trying to figure out what you want to do, what you think you should do, what you have to do, to the extent you think you have to do anything. I just want to hit home on the fact that you shouldn't just follow the crowd. If you are somebody who knows, I want to really try for a big law firm job, like Jamie was saying, grades are obviously important. Law journal or moot court or mock trial, those are important things to put in a resume. A lot of the fall recruiting jobs that you're going to have are going to actually explicitly say, you know, grade requirement or class percent requirement, law journal or mock trial, either preferred or required. And so if that's the route you want to go, realize that those are the expectations that are being set for you. But if that's not really something you're not totally sure about, you know, journal is going to be a lot of work. And I think, certainly, I didn't really know exactly what somebody as a 1L did on journal, as a 2L or a 3L. We would invite you to ask people, ask your friends who are upper-level students, ask one of us. What's a day-to-day life like? You know, I don't really know that I want to commit to write a long comment on this and devote what ends up being 4 or 5 months, you know, to this project. So think about that. Ask questions. Do your homework on it. Don't just follow the crowd, because it's going to feel like everybody is doing journal on spring break. It's going to feel like that. I was in the minority. I knew I didn't want to do that, and I think I can count on one hand the number of people I knew who didn't do that. And so I just felt like, wow, I'm kind of an outsider, like I'm totally a slacker, everyone else is doing it. But I just knew, and I was comfortable enough with myself to say, I'm just not going to do it, and whatever everyone else is telling me, that's not for me. Think about what it is, again, like I said before, what brought you to law school? What do you want to get out of law school? For me, I know I want to be a good lawyer. That doesn't necessarily mean that I, you know, want to have, like, you know, the top grades, the top, you know, I want to be on a law journal, I want to be in charge of all these things. You know, so for me, I knew, like, I want to do clinic as a 3L. I want to learn how to be a good lawyer. I don't necessarily have an interest in doing, like, a journal just to put it on my resume. So think about those kinds of things. Think outside the box, obviously. You know, it's a small environment here. There's going to be a lot of things that you think you're compelled to do. But there are other options out there as well for you. I'm going to be a dork and hold up my ABA student lawyer magazines, which I get. And none of these articles really, like, you know, really is earth-shattering. It doesn't really give you that much, you know, insight. But, you know, like, does an MBA add value? Like, there's interesting, like, I'm getting an MBA, so I thought that was interesting. Like, getting published, you know, transition smoothly into law school. Like, things like that that, you know, these are not, like I said, they're not earth-shattering. But then again, look how short it is. Like, how long does that take to read? You read it on the Metro. Those can give you some idea of, like, what it is you really want to do. And your professors are great resources. You know, if you say, I want to work for some kind of nonprofit, or, like, I want to do something that's going to, like, you know, Obama's elected now, so it's all about hope and change and, like, public service. Well, you want to do something in that field, like, you don't really know how to do it. Maybe some of the activities we have doesn't really offer what you need to get out of that. So think, you know, be flexible, think outside the box. For those of you who came to school and knowing exactly what you wanted to do, and you're still on track to do that, that's great. I envy you that you know exactly what it is you want to do. So you should feel comfortable enough to try something new. Try to take a class that it's not really in your wheelhouse. You know, expand your horizons a little bit, because at the end of 3 years, you're going to be working for the rest of your life. You know, you're not going to go back to school. There's the reality. So, you know, just keep an open mind if you're definitely somebody who knows what you want to do. We have a wealth of opportunities with the people we bring in. Like, there's a military commissions panel today. You know, like, that's kind of a random thing to have here, but we have a lot of random things like that that can really get you into some kind of field that you're interested in. And, you know, a lot of the people, like, at a panel like this, we're going to talk, everyone's going to leave. But if you're somebody who's like, I'm not really sure, I'm going to go talk to that person and say, you know, can you just give me your thoughts about this? People love to talk. Like I said, my tax professor, he was ready to go. I had to stop and be like, I have to go somewhere. People love to tell you their experiences. They're a great resource. This is a great opportunity to think about what it is you want for your profession and your life. And that's, you know, there's a lot of pressure there, but at the same time, don't just shuffle through and do the whole, I'm going to do journal, I'm going to do, you know, fall recruiting, if that's not truly what you want to do.
A lot of heartache. If that's not what you want to do and you put yourself through it, it sucks. And, you know, we're trying to just give you a broad general overview here, but if you talk to us one-on-one, if you talk to other 2Ls, you know, we have a lot of friends that are involved in a lot of different things, so if we can't necessarily give you an honest opinion about something, we can point you to someone who will. I mean, I think the students that have already done this are some of your best resources, because one-on-one, we will tell you exactly what we think and, you know, exactly where we fell down or where we wished we'd done something differently, and I think that's really valuable to take advantage of.
Yeah, that's why we listed all our office hours and emails, because we'd be happy if you came to us and you're like, I'm thinking of doing this, this, and this. Am I crazy? And we'll tell you yes or no based on our experiences. And just to reiterate, you know, practitioners in the field, like, a job as a lawyer is to be a counselor, so they really like, you know, trying to help you figure things out. I know that I'm really interested in education, and I work for the General Counsel's Office of American University, which I happen to get through a random network. And, you know, I asked them, I'm like, you know, I want to do this job. Would it be better for me to do clinic or to be an editor for my law journal? And they're like, do clinic. And, you know, I'm obviously not going to solely base my decisions on what people tell me, but the more advice you get, the more perspectives you get, the more research that you do into, you know, all your activities and how you choose things, the happier you're going to be. So just think about all these as different ways to grow professionally. So are there any last-minute questions? Otherwise, we'll stay up here, and you can see what we've done if you've had any specific questions. So thank you for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you.